Well, Ralph, what sort of influence does Masonry have in the world today?
They claim in their own literature to be the most powerful organization in the land and to ordain kings and shape the destinies of worlds, and that's exactly true. This nation was set up by the Masons. You can find that evidence on the back of our dollar bill. It's very easy to do. You can find it in the Constitution, where they set up a tyrannical government in the United States under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. That was done. I can't find any opposition to that. Possibly Thomas Paine, but if he did object to it, he didn't put it in writing, but I've read where some people claim that he was the only one who objected to that passage. So it's all over the place. And I remember back in 1985 when I found the first book I read on the subject, I was hard to believe that so many people had missed what these people were saying in their own literature. So I started researching into the Masonic Lodge and toured the country in 1985 with the speech entitled Secret Societies and the New World Order. And I exposed the back of the dollar bill and the Masonic Lodge and the Weishaupt and the Illuminati, etc., when there was very few people talking about this. So we know that where we have been, and we now know where we're going. And I can be honest with you, I'm sure you know as well, Dr. Stan, it's not going to be very pleasant.
Well, I think the amazing thing is that all of the conservative, almost all of the conservative organizations, and almost all of the religious organizations in the United States refuse to talk about this or play it down. And of course, you know, they will talk about the Christian part of our country, the Christian heritage, which certainly has played an important part. But they totally ignore the occult influence that was here when America was founded. In fact, it was even here shortly after the Pilgrims and certainly the Puritans landed here and came to this country. And these secret societies at that time, of course, they were the Rosicrucians. But of course, if you go through Masonry, you will actually find that certain of the levels of Masonry, certain stages of Masonry, refer to both the Templars, Knights Templar, and the Rosicrucians. Because modern-day Masonry is simply a continuation of the ancient mystery religions, which were embraced both by the Knights Templar and by the Rosicrucians and by the Illuminati and by the Jacobins, all dedicated to one thing, creation of a new world order and a new world religion. Once you understand that, you can understand that what's going on over in the Middle East today is simply a great diversion. Perhaps it'll lead to World War III. And that's how they'll bring it about. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Ralph Epperson, who studied this whole movement extensively, and so often you'll hear the Masons say, well, we're not a secret society, we're just a society with secrets. How do you counter that sort of a remark?
Well, I just say then, please invite me to one of your rituals then. If it's not secret, then it let me come. In fact, why don't you allow your wife to go? Your wives, they don't go. Your children can't go. And I wonder why, if it's not secret.
And, of course, it's amazing how they will distort facts, and they will say, well, of course, you know, there's nothing secret about it. Well, of course, we do have these rituals, but, I mean, they really have no meaning. Of course, we don't. We're not a religion. How do you answer that when they insist we're not a religion?
Well, they've got their own God. They call him the Supreme Architect of the Universe. During their ceremonies and rituals, they pray to this God. They have a priest. They have an altar. They have a religious service. They sing. That's what you call a religion. And that's by the very, those things are the very things that are the accoutrements of religion, the trappings. So they have a religion, and they are. And the goal of they start with the premise that you've got to believe in a supreme being. By the way, I watched a video last night on television about the Masons, and they said you have to have a belief in God. That's not true. You have to believe in a supreme being, which is undefined. You are the one, the initiate is the one that defines that term, not the Masons. So I believe that you could believe in a fire plug as being a supreme being and get in. And that's true.
Well, of course, as you get into a higher level of Masonry, though, while you begin to find out who that God is, I mean, this is the thing. They actually brag in Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike's book, how they intentionally deceive the people who are brought into the lodge, the apprentices they refer to them. They intentionally deceive them and lead them away from the truth, which is the light. And they always keep going back to the light. It's always about the light.
Well, you know, let me, if we can, let's start with that very briefly. For those that are new to this idea that the Masons have something to hide, during the first three degrees, which are called the Blue Lodge, blue like the color, the sky, Blue Lodge, as the initiate, are completely unprepared for what's about to befall you. You walk through a ritual, your eyes closed, with the rope around your neck, with your shirt unbuttoned, and your pants leg rolled off, and I think your shoes are gone, or at least maybe one of them is gone.
You're wearing a blindfold, aren't you?
Yes. And that's intended to show you that you are in darkness and that we're going to show you what the light is. And during the three steps, the first three degrees, the vice president, I'll call him that, they have another name for him, just to make sure you understand, it's the equivalent of the vice president, second in charge. He takes the initiative to the first in charge.
The first in charge is the worshipful master, isn't he?
Yeah, I was just trying to avoid all that, just to let people know that it's like the equivalent of the president, the number one man in charge. And he asked the second man in charge, what do you ask for this initiate? The initiate doesn't answer. The vice president does for him. Light in the first, more light in the second, and further light in the third. And then at the third degree at the end, they tell you that the light represents the true knowledge of deity, unquote. The implication is that you and your beliefs in your church or your synagogue or your temple, whatever it is, where you go to your services, that you don't get the true knowledge of deity. Only the Masons have that. But that's where it's left. That's it. That's as far as you go. They never do, as far as I can tell, explain to you what that light is or who this true knowledge of deity is. So then they say you can learn that if you go on into the 32nd degree, which is 29 more than the first three, of course. So then at the 19th degree, you were given, 14th degree, you were given a book called A Morals and Dogma. Morals and Dogma, which you just mentioned a few minutes ago. And in the 14th degree, you read about Lucifer being the light bearer. Is it he who bears the light? Doubt it not. Now notice, they have not told you that Lucifer is the true knowledge of deity, but you are to make the connection. I ask for light. They tell me the light represents the true knowledge of deity. And then they tell me in the 14th degree where that light comes from. Lucifer, the light bearer. Well, Lucifer just happens to be the name of the devil in the Bible, Satan. So you are to connect these three pieces of a chain into a chain. Number one, you ask for light. Number two, light represents the true knowledge of deity. And number three, Lucifer is the light bearer. And then you're supposed to say, oh my goodness, I see what they're saying. Lucifer is the true knowledge of deity. He is the grand architect of the universe. And that's where you're supposed to take it. And one last comment while we're on that thought. Pike later says in another of his books that if you don't see the secret, you are ignorant. They've told you enough to see it. And they're not going to tell you any more because it would be foolish to tell you more. But they've told you enough to see it. And if you don't see it, you are ignorant. That's what a brother calls another brother. Isn't that nice?
Well, you know, I think the fascinating thing is if you read Morals and Dogma and you don't know what they're talking about, you get totally confused. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of history there. And of course, they take you now, back from the very beginning of these mystery religions and alchemists. What were alchemists? Well, they told us that alchemists really wanted to create dross into gold. But that is only the outward part of that. I mean, they weren't really trying to create gold. They were trying to make the individual, to transform the individual. It was not they were going to actually make gold. They were going to transform the individual. But how did you transform the individual? Well, of course, down through the ages, people have always tried to understand the world. And, of course, Albert Pike talks about the Zoroastrians, about the Manichaeans, about the Marcions, about the Gnostics, about the Kabbalah. They all were really talking about religion. But when you understand that the basis of all of these, whether it be the Zoroastrians or the Marcions or the Manichaeans or the Kabbalah or the Gnostics, it is the belief that there are two gods. There is the good God and there's the bad God. There's the God of light, there is the God of darkness. And they worship the true God. We Christians worship the other God, the bad God. And once you can begin to understand that, then you can begin to understand what Albert Pike is really writing about. And suddenly all the pages of morals and dogmas simply are open to you. And you begin to understand that they believe that they have the true God. They worship him. And that God is Lucifer.
That's great. And one more thing, while we're there, Dutch, then let's talk about what Albert Pike wrote in Legenda. He said that to believe that the universe was created out of nothing was to believe a monstrous absurdity. Those are his exact words. So if you believe the universe was created out of nothing, you believe in a monstrous absurdity. The first 10 words of the book of Genesis in the Bible are, and God created the heavens and the earth in the beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So that means that the universe was created out of nothing, or there would have been no beginning. So what he just did was tell you that they regard the act of creation to be non-existent. The universe has always been here, and there was no creation. Now, I can prove, and it's very easy to do, that statement by Pike is absolutely absurd. It is the monstrous absurdity, because you can prove, as I've done in my little booklet called God Exists, I can prove, using science and logic and reason, that God does exist and that there was a beginning. There had to be a beginning. And the truth of that is in energy. Energy had to have a beginning, because it's slowly burning it out. That's the second law of thermodynamics. And if that is a law, that means that someday the universe will be in what they call a heat equilibrium. The temperature will be the same all over. But notice that hasn't happened yet. So this beginning had to be in a relatively short time ago. So Pike, the monstrous absurdity is not that you believe in a created universe, but that you believe in no created universe. That's the monstrous absurdity.
Well, I think the problem is that we have some of the most powerful and wealthy people in the world who embrace this philosophy, and if it's not Masonry, it's another one of the parallel secret societies like Skull and Bones or the Bohemian Grove or the Theosophy or the Rosicrucianism or the Lucius Trust. They all tie into this world movement, and of course they have front organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderbergers, of course, Club of Rome, but they are all working towards the same goal, and behind all of the front organizations are, of course, a Masonry and the spectrum of secret societies. And then you get into the background of the CFR. It came out of a secret society created by Cecil Rhodes, who himself was a Mason, as was his right-hand man, and, of course, another member of the original secret society, a man named William Stead, came out of Theosophy and out of the occult and spiritualism. But they're all, of course, looking for the answers to mankind, and they're trying to tap into the other dimension and the power of the prince of this world, the prince of darkness.
By the way, Dr. Stan, there's two things we might mention that are relatively current. Gerald Ford just died. Let's talk about him, and let's also talk about the man who played Kramer on the Seinfeld program. I never watched that show, so I don't know, but I do know that Kramer, and I don't even know, I can't remember his name, but Kramer just got into a hassle with, he was on at a comedy club, and apparently some black men were heckling him, and he got into a tirade about how evil black people were, and they were slaves and everything else. He was very bitter and very angry about their interrupting his program. It just so happens that when you do a search of this man on the internet, you find out that Kramer, the actor, not the TV character, but Kramer, the actor himself, is a 32nd degree Mason.
No, because this is a racist organization. They wouldn't let any black folks in their organization. Black folks have to have their own branches of Masonry. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about masonry and the fact that if you look into the background of modern-day masonry, you'll find that I think of our last 12 presidents, certainly four of them were masons. One of them took the 33rd degree when he was in the Oval Office. His name was Ronald Reagan. And then, of course, Bill Clinton was the demolay, the highest, and he was the ranking demolay in the country, which is why, of course, the Masons in the United States Senate all rallied together, even crossed the aisle from Republicans so they could vote for the Democrats to protect their fellow occultist, demolay Bill Clinton, from being impeached. And it was interesting to see who the Republicans were that went over to the Democrats to protect Bill Clinton.
Yes. Well, back to Gerald Ford, he just, as you know, passed away three, 4 weeks ago, whatever it was. And Gerald Ford was hailed as a great peacemaker, a great president, everything else. But the man, in my mind, was framed an innocent man in Lee Harvey Oswald. Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission, and there's no question that John Kennedy was murdered by a conspiracy and not Lee Harvey Oswald. It's a matter of proof. In fact, there's a photograph in the Warren Commission that shows you a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald on the first floor at the time of the first shot, so he couldn't be upstairs. That means that since it was in the Warren Commission, that Gerald Ford knew that, and Gerald Ford framed an innocent man, Lee Harvey Oswald. And it just so happened that Gerald Ford and Earl Warren and Richard Russell and J. Edgar Hoover, the key players in the Warren Commission and the investigation of the assassination after it was over, were all Masons. Isn't that interesting? And he later became president because he did a nice job in the Warren Commission.
And he was well rewarded for his treachery, but that is never brought up by the controlled media. Nope. Any more than most of the things we're talking about tonight would ever be mentioned in the major media. Well, I think it's so very important that people understand the influence of Masonry at every level of our society today, working within our courts. And if you happen to have a Masonic judge, or you have to have Masons on the jury, and the person who is suing you or bringing charges against you is a Mason, you don't have a chance. And when you have a secret society, you cannot get a fair trial. That's the problem, and nobody ever wants to tell that.
You know, the Masons are very proud of George Washington, but the first president, but they failed to point out that John Quincy Adams, I think, was like the fourth or the sixth president, was very, very critical of the Masons. He was, in fact, angrily so. He wrote the letters that have been reprinted, just vilifying the Masonic Lodge and as to how evil they were and what they were up to in this nation. And he said that this nation could not exist unless we eliminated the Masonic order. But, of course, he wasn't successful, and they're still there. They're around today, like you said. Ronald Reagan became an honorary 33rd in the White House just before he left office. Now, what was he doing that for? Just 6 months before Ronald Reagan took the, whatever they went through, the letters and the articles aren't very clear, but we know he became an honorary because the Masons have acknowledged it, and he acknowledged it in a letter. But just 6 months before that, the Church of England was very critical of the Masonic Lodge and that Christians shouldn't be members. Yet Ronald Reagan claimed to be a Christian, but he became an honorary Mason. I wonder why.
Well, because he was very deeply involved in astrology. I just finished reading the book called What Does Joan Say, written by Nancy Reagan's astrologer.
So wasn't it...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about the Masonic influence in our society today, and maybe if we can get back to the discussion of the influence of Masonry on our courts and our judicial system, and the fact that when you have people who swore an oath to protect one another, and of course even to let one of their fellows go if he's guilty of both either treason or murder, how can you expect to get an honest trial? This is why you cannot have a free society and a secret society that permeates every aspect of our nation today. So pick the story up there, Ralph.
Well, yeah, there was a story in one of the books I read about Andrew Johnson, who was the man who took over after President Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth, who, by the way, happened to be a Mason. President Johnson was visiting with Albert Pike, and there was a general, I think by the name of Granger, I think his name was, in the room with the three of them together. And they had a long conversation, and the general came out and testified under oath that the man that President Johnson was talking to was Albert Pike, and he said he felt like Albert Pike was the president's superior. Now, wait a minute. When you're the president of the United States, you're the superior. No. General Granger said he thought that Albert Pike was the president's superior, and that's very true because Johnson was only a 32nd degree Mason, and Albert Pike was a 33rd. And when you, I have a copy of the application that you sign when you decide to go on to from the third degree through fourth, and then up to the 32nd. It says you will obey every summons given to you by a 33rd degree Mason. That means that Johnson, in any president who's a Mason, is not our supreme commander. He is obligated to take orders from the 33rd degree council, any 33rd degree Mason. Now, what does that mean about our nation?
And have you ever gotten a question to any of the degrees above the 33rd degree?
Dr. Stan, you know, people keep telling me about this, and I know that I read years ago in Mackey's encyclopedia that there's two orders in France, I think. They're right of Mizraim and one of Memphis or something.
One's
got like
right.
92 or 96 or whatever it is. But I'll say this, Dr. Stan, I am convinced from my own research of their literature that the 33rd degree council runs everything, including the 96th degree. So that's all window dressing. The 33rd degree council, in their own literature, says they are the mother jurisdiction of the world. They are the mother council of the world. That means they're the ones running the show. And one of the evidences of that is that statue of Albert Pike in Washington, D.C. I, when I was there in 1990 at a conference about Masonry, it was called by a bunch of authors like myself who were researching the Masonic Lodge. I went to see the statue, and the statue is of Albert Pike, and on the base of it, it says that he was the leader of the worldwide Masonic movement. He was a 33rd degree Mason, and he was the leader of all of Freemasonry. So I believe that means that the 33rd degree council runs everything. You can have 96 or 4,000 degrees. The 33rd, I believe, runs the whole show.
Well, of course, there in Washington, D.C. is the House of the Temple, where Albert Pike's bones are interred, where, of course, right in our nation's capital is the center of modern-day Masonry. Is that where the 33rd degree Masons meet, or do they still meet in the South?
As far as I know, they meet at least in that temple, but once again, no one knows because we can't get in there. They are secret. I've been challenging Masons to a debate anytime they want to, and if they say it's not secret in my books that I write, I ask them to invite me to one of their rituals. I want to see it for sure. Show me. But I've never gotten an invitation, Dr. Stan. I don't quite understand that.
I think you know and I know that they are not allowed, of course, to tell the truth about their rituals. They're not allowed to tell you what their secrets are. They have sworn, you know, with horrible, horrible punishments if they were ever to reveal any of the secrets of Masonry. And they know very well that Masons get killed who actually, you know, do tell the truth. I've had 32nd degree Masons who've dropped out of Masonry, and of course when I've asked them to come on the radio to talk about it, and even though they've sworn and renounced their oaths, they live in constant fear, because once you have sworn those oaths and you realize that you've sworn those oaths to the devil, why, you always fear that of course they're going to come after you. Even though you've become a Christian, of course, the thing is that when you really are a Christian, you have to realize you don't have to fear the devil. But it's the only protection any of us have against the prince of this world and his agents who work at every level of our society today. Most Masons have no idea what Masonry is about, but there's a small group who do. Is that pretty accurate?
Absolutely.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about Masonry, its influence here in America, its influence on the history of our nation, and, of course, where it is leading us today. And of course, the fact that modern-day Masonry is simply the continuation of the ancient mystery religions. And whether it would be the Gnostics, or whether it would be the Illuminati, whether it would be the Templars or the Rosicrucians or the Kabbalists, they are all talking about the same God. And of course, the fact that there are two gods, the good God and the bad God, and they believe they worship the good God, who gives man total freedom. Of course, that's a lie, but it doesn't matter. They believe it, they give their lives for that purpose. And they're usually very, very well rewarded for turning their back upon the God of the Bible. So, actually, of course, as you've debated the Masons through the years, and I know you've been on even on television talking about this, do you think that more and more people are beginning to understand the danger that Masonry poses for the maintenance of our freedom here?
Yes. By the way, Dutchman, if I may just mention this, someone put one of my videos onto the Internet, and if I may, I'd like to tell you, there's no cost, no obligation. I don't make any money on this. I don't have any. I'm not the one that put it on there, but if you go to Google and then click over to on the top line where it says videos, you click on that, and then a new little search engine, little box shows up. Type in America's Secret Destiny with an apostrophe. America's Secret Destiny, and then go or click on it or enter whatever it is, and suddenly it'll go to that location, and it'll start a two-hour video called America's Secret Destiny. I think I made it in 1988, but it's there. It's 2 hours long, and it's getting a lot of play and a lot of great interest. I'm getting very nice comments from people who go there and watch it. And by the way, it covers the Masonic Lodge and the America's Secret Destiny. What is? People say, I didn't know we had a secret destiny. Yes, we do. The Masons are the ones that say it.
Right. So we carry a book written by Manly P. Hall called The Secret Destiny of America. Now, we do not carry that in our regular list. In fact, people have to actually request it, because it is only for researchers. We don't want people to think that in any way we approve of the message, but I know you're well acquainted with Manly P. Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And his writings, The Secret Destiny of America. And, of course, I'm sure it's very similar to America's Secret Destiny.
Yes, I actually, there's more to the story than Albert and Manly P. Hall told us.
Hold that thought.
I put my video out for it, is to show you just how serious the problem is. We've had a secret destiny since this nation was founded. And the evidence of that is on the back of our dollar bill. Those two circles are the Great Seal of the United States, and they contain our secret destiny.
All right, fine. Before we unveil it, Ralph develops that idea in just a moment. America does have a secret destiny. In fact, certainly George Bush talked about that in the next to the last paragraph of his second inaugural speech. That was the 20th of January, 2005, and where he said, you know, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, when our soldiers fell row on row in pursuit of a union based upon liberty, when our people marched in righteous indignation beneath the banner of freedom now, or they were acting on an ancient hope that's meant to be fulfilled. And, of course, that's esoteric writing. You put an idea at the beginning and the end of the sentence, and then you fill in the middle with a lot of things to confuse people, because they want to confuse us. But the true purpose, true statement was, when our founders declared the new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that's meant to be fulfilled. Well, we've got Henry calling from England, and I don't want to keep him on the line. Henry, how are you tonight?
Yeah, hello?
How are you tonight?
Hi, hello. Okay. Here you have Everson on. I know he was a friend of William Cooper. Here's the thing. I was going to ask him this. In Kessinger Publishing, they used to put out a catalog. Now it's just strictly on the web. They have a 44-degree Rites of Memphis. I think, have you heard of that book or seen that? Also, there used to be another book called The Deadly Deception by somebody who
Jim Shaw
gives the right, and then they said they converted to Christianity or something.
Yes, to answer your second question, if I may.
Okay.
The book was written by Jim Shaw and Tom McKenney.
Okay.
It's called The Deadly Deception. Jim Shaw, between his 32nd degree and 33rd degree, became a Mason.
He became a Christian.
Forgive me. Yes, he was a Mason. Thank you. And became a Christian, and he went to Washington, D.C. for the 33rd, and he told you what happened. And how they...
I never read that book. I never see it, but that you may have known. What is it with the 33rd degree anyway? What is the right to... Well, you don't have to go into detail, but I can't find that book anymore.
No, he died very, very shortly after that book was published.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
You know, there's another guy named Robert Knight or something with Knight. It sounds like Robert Knight.
Right. He wrote a number of books, and he's dead, too.
Right. He's mysteriously died. He wrote two books, and he died?
Right.
One of those books was written about Jack the Ripper, who was the Mason, and he took orders from the Queen of England to kill those prostitutes down in, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the place, but that area, and he got away with it. Of course, the Masons inside the Scotland Yard and the police department and whatever else they have in England made sure that he got away with it.
Henry, it's very dangerous sometimes to write about this sort of thing, to talk about it. I believe that God has been protecting Ralph Epperson. I believe God's protecting me, and I hope you'll pray for his protection for ours as well. But you're absolutely right. Now, the first question you asked about was the this book on the rites of Mithras and Mithraeum. Are you acquainted with the book, Henry?
Oh, 44 about? Degrees, something or something like that.
44 degrees.
You're asking me?
Yes.
Yes. No, I'm not familiar with that book. As I said before, I don't think this rite has any significance. Because I believe the 33rd degree runs the entire organization, all of Freemasonry, and the confirmation is on the statue of Albert Pike, because it says that he was the leader of the worldwide Masonic movement. That's everybody, including the Rite of Mithras.
Right. And the 33rd degree is the highest honorary degree of the Scottish Rite, but of the York Rite, like Ted Turner, you have only 13 degrees. It's a shorter
Yes, but
distance.
But they, too, take orders to obey the 33rd degree.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Scottish Rite...
I thought they're like equal strength, and once you get to Knights Templar or 33rd degree, they just work together.
And,
I see.
And Henry, my wife just mentioned that we do carry copies of The Deadly Deception. We still have some, so we probably are one of the last sources of that book. You can get it to...
Now, let me ask you something. Is there any way you could... Somebody can write stuff like this. I mean, maybe the reason why Epperson may not have gotten killed is because he didn't actually belong to it.
Well,
you know, there seem to be the ones that usually are a member that are in it and get to that degree, and then they write the book and they get killed.
That's
but
right.
The ones that are outside of it, it seems to be different. Or am I wrong?
There are other books that we have that are written by people who are trying to expose the occult, and they've met from a very, very serious very accidents. There was a man who wrote a series of books on the occult hierarchy, the occult agenda, the occult. There were three books he wrote. He was a Cambridge scholar, and he wrote the third book, and that was the end of him. So these things happen. In fact, we're having Ed Decker on later this week, and they tried to poison him several times. But I don't know.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Okay, fine. Well, Henry, thanks very much for calling.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Oh, wait. Give the phone number, too, where to get the book catalog, too.
1-800.
And give the number, too, because my letters on my telephone thing are sort of sketched off, so I can only go by numbers as opposed to names.
800-544-8927.
Okay, 800-544-8927,
or if you prefer, 1-800-5-HIV, WAR, because we truly are at war today.
Okay.
Hey, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that was Henry. He wasn't from England, he was from New England. Before I go on, though, I want first to have Ralph get out his webpage and how people can get in touch with him and get a free book that he offers. The free book is called A Book Review of Morals and Dogma. And let me tell you, it will really open your eyes as to what this is all about. So go ahead, Ralph. Let's get your website out. And you put out your telephone number if you want to.
Okay, I have an 800 number that people can call. I think it's only good in the United States and Canada. if there's any, you know, people living outside the those two nations. But anyway, if you want to call me, I'll be happy to talk to you. It's 800-422-3888. 800-422-3888. And that's Publius Press, my business. I'll answer the phone. It's nighttime here in Arizona, so tomorrow or any time over the weekend, call me, or even early evening. If you want to go to my website, it's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, dash, Epperson, E as in Edward, P-P as in Peter, E-R-S-O-N.com. Ralph-Epperson.com, and I've got my website. One more thing, if I may, Dr. Stan, I've got a book out on Jesse James, the famous outlaw, who, by the way, was also a 33rd degree Mason, and was actually elected to the Senate of the United States from Montana for one term, 1901 to 1907. Jesse James, the famous outlaw, was a United States Senator. If you want that, if you want to just look at it, if nothing else, look at the material on the website. It's Senator Jesse James, all one word, SenatorJesseJames.com. Go there and you can look at the material. It's an incredible story. Jesse James was a United States Senator.
All right, fine. In fact, we've done a number of interviews with Ralph on that. I don't want to get into that subject, but there's a place over in Nevada. It's called Clark County. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
And it's named after, of course, the name that Jesse James took after her curse. He escaped. Well, let's go to Maggie calling from Texas. Hi, Maggie. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I have a couple of questions and a comment. About a year ago, I was at a convention, a rather small group, in which part of it was actually held in a common area in the Masons Club, or temple, whatever. And after we ate, the lodge master actually took some of us around for a tour, and I'm sure he didn't reveal any deep, dark secrets, but he did take us into at least two worship rooms, or whatever you would call them, ceremonial rooms, show us around and give us some history. My questions then are three and very quick. One, is this a common thing to do? And there were a lot of women among us. Secondly, how high a rank and degree would a person have to attain to be the lodge master? And three, do they actively recruit? He said that they do not. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Maggie. And okay, fine. Do they take people on tours of lodges?
Yes. I'm told that you can go through the 33rd degree temple in Washington, D.C., and I've had people take pictures and send them to me, so apparently that's available. But you can't just walk in. They take you through a tour, like this woman went through.
But they're not going to actually see the secret ceremony.
Oh, no. And then none of the books will be out. None of the hangings or trappings or symbols will be there. It's just a room with chairs and a floor. Maybe the floor might be marked with squares like a chessboard, black and white. But that's so what? That you could have that in your kitchen.
And of course, the second question would be, what rank do you have to be to become the worshipful master?
Well, I believe the worshipful master in a lodge is always a blue lodge. You can be a 32nd degree or a 3rd degree. I met a Mason who was. And his family were having some real problems, and the pastor at the church that he was going to called me and asked me to sit down with the young man. Well, he wasn't a young man, but he was probably in his 40s or 50s. And he was a 3rd-degree Mason, going to become the master, the worshipful master of his lodge here in Tucson. And he was the next in line. You don't get elected to that job. You work your way up from the bottom. You're elected at the bottom, and then you work your way up just through succession. And so we talked, and I showed him what the problems were. He went home, got his family together. All of his family members were in the Masons, in the women's group or children's group, and they all got out together. And I had a call from the pastor's wife 6 months later, and they've seen that Masonry was the problem in their marriage. So that's the answer to your question. Apparently, you can be a 3rd-degree Mason and be the master of your lodge, but the 33rd degree of Masonry runs everything, in my opinion, worldwide.
Do they actively recruit?
No, yes.
They are now recruiting because
they are really hurting for members. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine in California, that, by the way, knows Dr. Stan, he called a man in Southern California who was paid by the Masons, and they said they had 4.8 million members in 1984 or something like that, and now they're down to 3 million, and they're really hurting. And they're physically, for the first time, in violation of all the oaths that they took, they take, actively recruiting. Someone sent me a copy of a, or maybe it was on the internet, of a billboard in Michigan where they're recruiting, you know, ask one to be one or something, and then there, I've seen bumper stickers that they put out now that say, ask one to be one. So, they're recruiting because they're really hurting for members. And that's a very healthy sign.
And, Chris, I think this is in part, of, you know, directly referable to the work of Ralph Everson and a handful of other people who have been courageous enough to come out and tell the truth about this Luciferian organization where most people, most Masons, have no idea what it's really all about. And when you explain to them that there are two gods, there's the God that the Mason worships, and there's the Christian God. And then they begin to read a morals and dogma. They can understand it. Up to that point, you can't understand morals and dogma unless somebody points out what it's all about. Hey, thanks for calling, Maggie.
Oh, thank you very
much. God bless. And please get all those people down there in Texas. What part of Texas are you in?
Central Texas.
All right, fine. Well, please get all those people in Central Texas, north, south as well. God bless. Bye-bye.
Yes,
get them listening to us.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stan. Very fine. Thank you. Wonderful guest. I think I heard him say on a previous episode that the Masonic initiates become married to Lucifer in some ceremony that symbolizes that. So I wanted to ask him, is there a special marriage ceremony ring that the initiate is given? I know that they have some special handshake.
Well, let's see what Ralph has to say about it. Have you ever heard anything about a marriage to Lucifer?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I found the evidence that there is indeed a marriage ceremony at the 14th degree. There's a company called McCoy, M-A-C-O-Y, that publishes a catalog with all of their material in it. And one day I was slipping through, and I saw I got one. Anyone can get one. I mean, I'm not a Mason, never been a Mason. But I got a free copy, and I'm flipping through it, and there's a picture of a bunch of rings. And one of them, the second one or third one in the top row, was called a 14th degree wedding ring. And it looks just like a wedding ring. So I then, subsequent to that, unknowingly, apparently I've had this article for some time, I found an article called The 14th Degree Wedding Ring, and it's an article about the sanctity of the wedding ring, that the Mason is given this ring. So I don't think there's any question that apparently it's not something that you buy on your own or choose to buy. They give you one, and it looks just like a wedding ring with one exception. There's a triangle and the letter Yod in the Hebrew letter Yod for their God. So in that, since there's no woman allowed in the 14th degree ceremony, you've got to conclude, well, then who are you marrying? Because the article talks about the significance and importance of the marriage ceremony. So who are you marrying? Well, you're marrying the God. And the God is, as we've already said, it's already proven, the God is Lucifer. You've got to conclude that the 14th degree Mason, if he puts this ring on, is marrying their God, Lucifer, Satan, the devil.
But I don't think the average person by the 14th degree has any idea what it's all about. But it sure is fun because, of course, you're learning all these mysteries and all these secrets. And you're promised, you know, you're going to have great power when you finally find the final secret.
Oh, but Dr. Stan, I got to ask one last thing.
Go ahead.
I heard someone say that they have a secret expression that symbolizes Lucifer, and it was either Jabalah or Jubalah. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. Go ahead, Ralph. Explain
that. Yeah, there's
that.
Two words. There's one is Jabalon, and the other is Mahabon. And both of them are apparently secret names that they're revealing to you of their God, Lucifer, Satan, the devil.
Well, now, of course, I thought Jabalah was a combination of Jehovah, Baal, and...
It's not the God, Dr. Stan, because they admit in their literature that there are two layers inside all of the worships of Jabalon and, et cetera. So that if On means Osiris and Baal means Baal and Jah means Yahweh. So there's a secret worship, and that's the key. I use the example of a circle inside of a dot inside a circle. Everyone who believes in the God is inside the circle. If you don't believe in the God, you're outside the circle. And inside that circle, in the center, is a small dot of those who know that the God being worshipped, and let's just make it up, Osiris, the Egyptian sun god, in our little example. If you believe in Osiris, you're inside the circle. But inside that circle of people who believe in Osiris is a small group called the adepts, the sages.
Hold it, Ralph. We're going to let Jack go. Thanks so much for calling, Jack. We're just about out of time here. Well, Ralph, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let me just finish that last thought. That those people inside the dot believe or know that the God being worshipped is not Osiris or all over the world any God that you wish, but is in truth Lucifer, Satan, the devil, their God, the great architect of the universe. And that's the danger of this thing.
And of course, it's Jabal-O, I think is the name. It's Yahweh or Jehovah, Baal, and Osiris.
That's right.
Combination. And of course, they cannot let people understand. I mean, certainly this is the secret that's been passed down through the ages. And of course, there is tremendous power. In fact, Mandy P. Hall writes about when the mason on the block has learned the secret of his craft, he will have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. And this comes from a book called The Lost Keys of Freemasonry. When the mason on the block has determined the secret of his craft, has mastered the secret of his craft, he will have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. The average mason cannot even understand what this is about. But the thing is that, yes, if you give yourself to the prince of this earth, you will get tremendous advantage. You will have tremendous power and wealth, but at the cost of your eternal soul. You got about a minute and a half to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, you're very kind to allow me the chance. I would urge your listeners to get in touch with my material. Go to my website. Call me if you wish. If you wish to challenge what I've said, please call me as well. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. I know that I've been researching this since 1962. I believe I know from their own literature what the Masons are up to, and I write books about it. And I would urge your listeners to find out and find out, because we need to know what these Masons are doing to us and where they're taking us. America does have a secret destiny. It's on the back of your dollar bill.
And, of course, epitomized by the pyramid, capped by the all-seeing eye, which is hovering over the top of the pyramid, has not been allowed to descend.
But once
the New World Order is accomplished, then the capstone will fit into place.
That's right.
Of course, the age-old plan, the Novus Ordoris Seclorum, the New Order of the Ages will be in place as well. Well, Ralph, I want to thank you so much for everything you do and for always being such a willing guest here on Radio Liberty. It's always a pleasure to have you, and we hope our listeners out there across the country and really throughout the world will benefit from your years and dedication to exposing this truly dark and sinister religion.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. It was my pleasure.
Good night. God bless.
God bless you.
All right. Well, that was Ralph Everson, and Ralph has had a lonely battle for many years. But he's always been true to God.